If you are just getting started with the NGSS and 3D teaching, I want to invite you to check out Bring Wonder Back, an on-demand video series designed to help you understand why moving through the textbook and teaching topics is actually crushing your students' curiosity and what you can do instead. It's going to help you shift the work of learning where it belongs by building your understanding of explorations and discovery-based teaching practices. And finally, I'm going to help you take the first steps toward transforming your students into scientists through 3D learning, which is really what the NGS is all about. You can access this video series at iExploreScience/wonder and get ready to bring wonder engagement and a love for learning back to your science class. All right, to the show. Welcome to the Teaching Science in 3D podcast. My name is Nicole Van Tassel.
And I'm Erin Sadler.
And we are two science teachers dedicated to helping you cut through the confusion and meet the intent of the NGSS so you can master all three dimensions. The NGSS can seem totally overwhelming, but implementing these standards doesn't need to be.
Hi, everyone. This is Erin Sadler, and today I am interviewing Julie Cannon. Julie Cannon has worked as a teacher in Illinois and a science instructional coach. She's also the woman behind Julie Cannon Science, and she is wonderful and brilliant, and I hope that you enjoy listening to this as much as I enjoy talking to her. So let's go ahead and start talking to Julie. So Julie, can you tell me a little bit about your science background?
Sure. So I went to school for rehabilitation sciences. So I studied a lot of science in college and decided late in my junior year that I wanted to be a teacher. So I went to get my master's degree in secondary education. After that, I taught in Phoenix for 3 years. I taught 7th and 8th grade science. I moved to Chicago and taught 4th, 5th, and 6th grade science. After about 5 years of teaching, I started coaching half-time and teaching half-time, which was a perfect balance, I think. And then for the last 3 years, I've been the director of science instruction for kindergarten through 8th grade teachers at 7 different schools. Oh, I also taught a couple classes here and there during that time because I just love being in front of kids and really missed being in the classroom. So that's kind of what I've done over the last 10 years now.
And I know that you have, you've done some stuff. I don't know if it's at the statewide level or on your assessment for your state.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing a little bit of work with the Illinois Science Assessment. I was on that steering committee, which was an awesome opportunity. There were just tons of brilliant people that were part of that. And I was really lucky to be asked to join as well. I also was on a national team that kind of developed curriculum and training for regional leaders and for teachers implementing NGSS. So I've had a few things, a lot of different jobs.
Thank you. You have some experience.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I've tried a few things.
So when did you start working with NGSS?
So I know you know this, but I'm just a huge science nerd. So when they came out with the framework for K through 12 science education in 2012, before the standard, I printed it all out. I read the whole thing. I was so excited. And then they came out with the standards, I think the following year. And I read them all over the summer and that was my summer reading material, between 2 years of teaching. And so then that year, the 2013-14 school year, I started to try to incorporate some of the things into my 6th grade classroom, but I really didn't have an idea of what it should really look like. And it was, I was trying my best, but it was so new. There were no examples really that first time I was trying. That following year, I switched fully to the NGSS standards for my 5th grade classroom. And again, it was a long learning process, but I was trying my best to do it at that point.
Yeah, I think that a lot of us who have been doing this kind of since the beginning have that similar experience where we, you know, just downloaded the standards and we're like, oh, we'll just figure it out. And really, there was nothing when it first came out. And I, you know, like I remember just Googling, like, what is a model? You know, I had no idea even where to begin.
Yeah. And I'm still in that learning process. There's still so much to learn and to figure out. And it's a cool place to be where there's a lot of people who've already started figuring it out, but there's more to incorporate always and ways to make it better still. So yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah. And I definitely feel like the more I know, the more I realize I don't know.
It's right.
Those things. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So where is Illinois in their implementation process?
So Illinois was one of the lead state partners that helped to write the NGSS, and they adopted it in 2014, so pretty early on. There's definitely like a lag in development for like the assessments. Mm-hmm. Our state assessment the last few years was not really three-dimensional and it was definitely a bit behind. And I think a lot of states are in that place. Yeah. I also think as far as what I've seen in Chicago, it took a few years to get some really 3D curriculum and things out there because, you know, even if people switched over to the standards, we didn't know what a good curriculum looked like.
Right.
Now there's more resources available. And so I know within like Chicago Public Schools, they've done a lot more in the past few years with adopting curriculums and leading trainings for teachers and things like that. So it's definitely getting there, but it's still a process.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, the lag in resources and development really put us behind a little. They're starting to talk a little more about training teachers on the statewide level and things and what we need to start doing to really make sure that teachers are prepared. And so I'm really excited for those shifts. And I hope that that gets going soon now that we've kind of got the curriculum and now that they're getting the assessment piece figured out a bit. Now that's the next step. Well, how can we make sure that teachers feel comfortable using that curriculum?
Right. And
that assessment.
Right. We kind of did it backwards. I think in California, this was the first year that our assessment counted. So, the students have already taken the assessment twice. And then this is the third time that they've taken it, but they didn't approve curriculum until December of this last year. So the test came first and then the curriculum. And so it, you know, it counts, but people don't have curriculum. So it's kind of crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little hard because, you know, all these things probably should be developed a little more cohesively and, mm-hmm. you know, we're trying to fill in the gaps where we can and make it work. But I think every state I've seen has way different processes mm-hmm. for how they're adopting it and how they're rolling it out.
Yeah, definitely. So what are the biggest instructional shifts that you've made in your classroom and in coaching and all of that since you started working with NGSS?
I think one of the biggest things is just having a phenomena-based curriculum and having things, you know, being applied to real life scenarios instead of kind of these disconnected science ideas. And then also using the science and engineering practices to discover the mm-hmm. disciplinary core ideas. It was always the opposite where, okay, here are the facts. Now let's do an experiment with those facts. You know, it's kind of the opposite way. Let's do an experiment in order to discover the facts. Let's, you know, read articles and compile information to discover these facts. It's definitely switched the process a bit. I also love that it like has drastically limited the content. There's so much less per year to teach actually at a much deeper level. Yeah. And I've also found like looking at the framework and what is at different age levels just seems so much more appropriate. Like I was trying to teach like phases of the moon to like, I don't know if it was like fourth or fifth grade, but they're just too young to get that conceptual big picture and like all the moving pieces and to really understand what it means. And now it's in our eighth grade curriculum and they don't really see it. They see some things and some of the patterns and those things, but not like those three different moving pieces and what the shadows look like. Like they get that in eighth grade when they're actually ready for it. So
Yeah, I would definitely say that formatting. That it's so much more developmentally appropriate. Mm-hmm. And like, one of the things that I really like about the K2 standards is that they could be totally play-based and, you know, like, so fun. I worked on that very briefly and I missed that because those are really fun to work with. So like, what are some things, since you have experience at the middle school level and you also have experience at the elementary school level, what are some things? I know that there's some very obvious differences, you know, like you can't teach in the same depth to elementary school students, but what are some of the major strategy differences that you see?
You know, I think the elementary kids, one of the things that I think was so cool about going to all these different classrooms from kindergarten through eighth grade and seeing all the different teachers is that you actually do get to see a lot of connections and a lot of similarities. Like I was in a third grade classroom and hearing them using the vocabulary that I then saw later in the same day in an eighth grade classroom, all about like forces and motion.
That's awesome.
It was just like, by the time those third graders get up to the eighth grade, like they're going to know so much more than like our current eighth graders who didn't get that NGSS curriculum in third grade. And so I definitely think that there is a lot of similarities, and we can push a lot of rigor on those younger kids. I've seen like the third through fifth grade specifically is the group that I got a lot more experience with in the last few years. And I've seen them create some pretty detailed models, some pretty great explanations and arguments. And I think they can do those things on a pretty similar level, maybe with some more scaffolds than the upper grades. I love using the matrix of the science and engineering practices and the cross-cutting concepts that show you the bands like kindergarten through second, third through fifth, sixth through eighth, so that I don't push it too far with rigor in those different levels. But I definitely, I think that's kind of my go-to tool to figure out what's developmentally appropriate for where the kids should be.
Yeah. My daughter is just going into third grade, and it's such a cool age because she still has so much curiosity, but she also has the ability to like really produce her own ideas and all this kind of stuff. It's super fun. So, let's see. I know that I've gotten a lot of questions from teachers who do like science as a prep at their school. So they teach exclusively science to elementary school students. And one of the questions that comes up quite often is they don't know how to work with the general classroom teacher and how to communicate what they're doing in their classroom with you know, the kids' regular teacher. So do you have any advice there?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I did a lot was go into, like, we shared all of our curriculum folders with each other. And so I would go in and look at lessons that kids were teaching or that these other teachers were teaching and see, oh, the kids are learning these reading strategies. These are the annotation things that they're doing in ELA. And I would also incorporate the same ones into science for what they were doing with ELA. And then like math and seeing what their strategies were for like graphing and for different things. And I would actually use the same type of things in my lessons, because then it would also made it much easier for me, but also like supported those other teachers. So I think if one of the big things is just teaching, sharing those strategies across content teams and making sure that we're keeping it semi-consistent for kids and supporting each other with, you know, those different content specific strategies.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. I know that that one of the things that I see people struggling with is that like loss of control. And you know, now that I'm seeing more schools emphasize science, that often means that they're bringing in somebody specifically to teach science in elementary. And it seems like there's like, I don't know, it's just an interesting dynamic between the science teachers and the regular classroom teachers in a lot of places. So yeah.
I've talked to a lot of teachers who teach everything at those, like at the third through fifth level of like, I teach all the different subjects and then kind of don't feel like they have enough training or other things in science. I think it's ideal to have someone else come in and be able to really focus deeply on it. But I love seeing all the teachers who are so excited to incorporate it into their classroom. And I think something for them to think about is like, you can use similar practices across all your different contents. Even though science seems a little scary sometimes, and it does have really specific things that you need to do, you definitely can use similar strategies that you use from other contents too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So how has your assessment strategy changed since you implemented the NGSS?
So I think my summative assessments, I've started to do some similar things to what I do in a unit plan. Mm-hmm. And so I'm figuring out, starting by, you know, looking at the PEs that I'm assessing and finding a phenomena that could cover and fit that set of PEs that's different from what we did in the unit, and having the kids apply what they've learned to a brand new situation. And that really shows what they've learned, and can they take the things they learned with this phenomena in the unit and switch it and apply it to a different phenomena in the assessment. I also think it's really shifted the focus from fact to practices.
Yeah.
What can the kids do? Also what they know, but it's more focused in on what they can do. And that means the tests look much, much less multiple choice, a lot more of, you know, graphing and creating models and writing arguments and things that are a little trickier to grade, but tell you a lot more information.
Right.
And then another thing is creating kind of multi-component tasks to get at the three dimensions. So writing multiple related questions so that you can actually assess all three of those pieces. So it definitely looks a lot different. Something else that's a little bit different is the just thinking a little bit more about making like a cohesive system of assessments that will work together, from like the formative assessments in your classroom to summative assessments in your classroom to summative assessments at the district level, and then to the state assessments. And I think right now there's a lot of frustration because those are all kind of being developed separately.
Right.
Instead of in a cohesive way. And so that's something I've been thinking a lot about and doing a lot of research on lately. So I'm interested, once we start seeing more of the state assessments coming up, to see what that process looks like down the road.
Oh man, we could have some really nerdy conversations.
I could talk forever about it.
Nobody
I got to sit next to a man who writes a lot about NGSS assessments. His name's James Pellegrino.
I read like all of his stuff when I was doing my program. Yeah.
It's all amazing. And then I was sitting next to him and I was like nerding out so badly because I was like, oh, I have the expert right here. Let me ask him everything. And I was like, took so much of his time. But
oh my gosh,
I could talk about those things for a long time.
That's awesome. So what is some advice that you have for like formative assessment strategies?
So yeah, I think it's super important to be really proactive and gathering information either formally or informally with formative assessments so that you can adjust your instruction. The formative assessments can really be anything more formal like quizzes or exit tickets, and then more informal like listening to student conversations, observing labs, looking at student work from activities in the lesson. But I think a couple of the things when I was coaching teachers that I really pushed people to do is, as the teacher, take whatever the activity is or the formative assessment and do it yourself like you're a student. Mm-hmm. You'll realize if your instructions aren't clear enough, and you'll see what you really want kids to come up with as they're doing it. And then after that, use the work that you've just produced that you would want kids to produce to identify the criteria for success. And make sure that that is communicated to the kids really clearly. either posting it somewhere or putting even a checklist. I like to put like checklists in your diet, like by my diagrams for models. So kids actually see what they need to include and can check it off as they go. And then when you're circulating and giving kids feedback, then you have the idea of these are the three main things I'm looking for, and I can help kids ask them questions and make sure that they're getting to that point. Or you can like collect data. I always use like a blank seating chart and would just like write next to it for kids who have misconceptions. And then use that information if you're reviewing things as a group. So yeah, I really can't stress enough like doing the activity and then creating and communicating your criteria for success for kids. And then of course you have to give feedback on it. If you're not giving kids the feedback, then your formative assessment might help you like plan your next lesson and add in some, help to clear up misunderstandings, but you're not giving the kid the personal feedback to help them learn. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have, one of the struggles that I'm having when I'm writing assessments is balancing that, like making sure that they know what's required without giving them the answer. Do you have any advice on that end?
Yeah. So one of the things I do try to do is like, try not to do the heavy lifting for the kids. And mm-hmm. So even if you're telling kids the criteria, it's a bit vague, giving kids at least the at-bat to fully try it themselves. So like one of the examples, I was doing like models with my fourth grade class and I gave them the criteria, let them go. And it was pretty messy. It was not beautiful. But I let them do it and let them struggle with it for a while.
Yeah.
I walked around and looked at what I was seeing as trends. And I picked up, I got a kid specifically, asked them if I could put it under the document camera. And then you do like a show call and go over it with them. Okay, let's look at our criteria for success. And we're going to give this kid feedback on the things they did really well and give them feedback on what could make it even better. And then that way everyone watches and sees and the kids are giving the feedback. I'm not necessarily giving all the feedback, but they're also part of this process and they can watch us adjust it and change the model and add things. And then they have a chance to revise and do their model again. And that way you're not taking all the, you're not just doing it up front,
you know,
and the kids are just copying, right? The thought is still on them, but you're scaffolding that so kids can really see what it looks like and still be doing that heavy lifting.
Yeah, that's, I'm trying to do that more and more in my classroom with middle school kids, but doing it in small groups so that they're, you know, evaluating one model within a small group. But yeah, and it takes a lot of that grading and providing feedback. It takes a lot of that off of all the zillions of things that you have to do if they're able to provide feedback to each other.
Yes, absolutely. Kids giving feedback to each other, doing like whole group feedback sessions, and then teachers giving feedback. There's lots of different ways to provide feedback to kids. So, yeah.
And then if you're doing it whole group, then you're modeling what they could potentially be doing in a smaller group later as the year progresses or something like that.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So do you have a specific process for creating assessments that are three-dimensional?
Yeah, so I think I went over it a little bit earlier, but what I do is I start with the PEs that I want to assess, and I just review all the evidence statements and make sure they're fresh in my mind, disciplinary core ideas that I want to get to, the science and engineering practices I want to use in the questions, and then some of those more detailed explanations at the bottom of the evidence statements. I use a website that's awesome called stemteachingtools.org.
I love that website.
It's so great.
So good.
And it really provides some more concrete tools to go through this process. So after I do that, then I kind of think about what phenomenon could cover it. So right now I'm writing an Earth systems assessment for fifth grade. And I came up with the idea of a sinkhole. So
that's cool.
A girl's eating breakfast and she watches the news and there's a sinkhole that opened in her town. And she wants to know why do sinkholes happen and what can we do to prevent them? And that would also incorporate the earth systems and how they're interacting with each other to form a sinkhole. The groundwater depletion, and we look at, then we can put in the water distribution standard and human impact with removing the water from the ground that makes that sinkhole happen. And so they all kind of fit into that scenario. So then after I find that scenario, I start writing the questions. Mm-hmm. And STEM Teaching Tools has a great document called Task Format. So if you have like an SEP in mind, you can look at it and it'll give you different tasks and different ideas for questions that you can provide for students. And so I start there often. I also, they have a really good cross-cutting concepts prompt tool that I use occasionally as well to ask questions targeted at cross-cutting concepts. So yeah, I write the clusters of interrelated questions. And then I take the test myself, just like I would with my formative assessments, and look and see, are my directions clear? Is the criteria for success clear and not too much, to your point about giving things away? Yeah. And I can also use that student responses to help create rubrics too. So that's kind of the process that I use when creating those summative assessments.
Yeah, and those are really great. Those are really great resources. So how do you assess students for the purpose of learning rather than just for the purpose of issuing a grade?
So I've definitely found that with the shift to NGSS, it just makes this process a little easier, because with those disjointed standards and, you know, random tests that were all multiple choice without really an end goal, it did feel a lot like just assigning grades. Yeah. And now with like a phenomena where kids are trying to figure things out, the whole thing lends itself more to feeling like, oh, I'm learning, I'm discovering, the ownership's on the students. And so I think that really helps. Another thing that I did in my classroom was I didn't grade the formative assessments. I didn't even give like participation grades, but I know that some people do, just to hold students accountable. And I don't think that's a terrible strategy or a bad strategy by any means, but I didn't give those because I really wanted to push the idea that this is like your chance to
try
back and fix it and do your best, but it's not the final grade. And then I saved, I did grade things for like homework and stuff, but then I saved, my dog is going crazy at the Amazon delivery guy. But I did assign grades for summative assessments. And when I was teaching in Arizona, it was really cool. We did standards-based grading and everything was based on where students currently were. So even for those formative assessments, if kids were already, we had like grades 1, 2, 3, and 4. And if kids showed that they were at 2 at a certain point in the formative assessment, then they would be at a 2. And then when they moved up to a 3 for the next formative assessment, we moved them up and then tried to get to a 4. And so I thought that was kind of neat, because it really just focused on what do the students know, where are they in their learning process.
Gosh, that's such a good idea. I'm sure that you've gotten this too, like a lot of questions about standards-based grading, and I just don't feel like I'm there yet, you know, to where I don't feel like my assessments are in the right place where I can, you know, do that, but yeah, it's something I really like to do. Trying to think, like, what else could I ask you about? Do you have anything else to say about standards-based grading? Because I know that people would love to hear anything that you have to say about that.
You know, so the last 7 years, I have not been doing standards-based grading. So
yeah,
it's been not something I've thought about a ton, but I really did enjoy it when it was what my school did. I would say just being really clear, like what are the levels of progression and what would you expect kids to be seeing at each point, so that you, you know, what does it look like to be on the standard? What does it look like if you're above? What does it look like if you're slightly below or far below? Just making sure you have those really clearly laid out, so that it's consistent for each kid, because that was something that was a little tricky when we did it, was like, what does it actually look like?
Right.
And until we created those kind of rubrics for ourselves as teachers, we had a lot of trouble deciding, yeah. Well, what's like a two that's slightly behind the standard? What's the one that's far behind? What's a three that's right on? And what does four look like? And so I think that was one of the things that was really helpful.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to ask you. I can't think of anything else, but I just love talking to you, Julie.
Yeah, it was so nice to talk to you guys. I'm excited for this podcast.
Me too. I think it's going to be really good. So that was my conversation with Julie Cannon. I will link to all of the resources that Julie mentioned in the show notes, as well as her blog and her Teachers Pay Teachers store. It's always great to pick Julie's brain, and I hope that I'll get the opportunity to have her back on sometime really soon, because she's just a wealth of information. Make sure that you tune in next week to hear Nicole talk about how the NGSS will change your content. Thanks for listening. Bye. Making sure that your lessons are three-dimensional isn't always easy. While you don't need to include all three dimensions every single day, you do want to make sure that each dimension is regularly addressed. I developed a really simple 3D planner to help keep me focused. It helps me track which pieces I'm using in my daily lesson plans. It only takes me 5 minutes to fill out, and it helps me notice patterns in my own lesson planning. For example, when I first started using it, I noticed I wasn't including the cross-cutting concepts as often as I thought I was. Just by recognizing this, I was able to focus on this one piece and improve my lessons. Right now, you can grab the same template that I use for my own planning for free. Go to sadlerscience.com/3Dplanner to grab yours. That's sadlerscience.com/3Dplanner.